Jeffrey Epstein went to jail just before 10 this morning. He pleaded guilty in open court. He agreed to serve a total of 18 months in the Palm Beach Detention Facility, 12 for felony solicitation of prostitutes, and an additional 6 for procuring persons under 18 for prostitution. The conviction stemmed from several incidents from August of 2004 to October of 2005.
Beginning in at least 2002 and continuing until 2005, Epstein is alleged to have abused dozens of victims by causing them to engage in sex acts with him at his mansion in New York and at his estate in Palm Beach, Florida. The victims, all underage girls at the time of the alleged conduct, were given hundreds of dollars in cash after each encounter, either by Epstein or by one of Epstein's employees.
Billionaire financier Jeffrey Epstein may be headed back to court after a judge hinted that sealed documents from his 2008 case could be made public. Epstein was given a plea deal to avoid sex trafficking charges in 2008 after several underage girls claimed he sexually abused them. The Miami Herald says the documents would prove that he was involved in a sex trafficking ring.
President Trump is defending his labor secretary today, Alexander Acosta. Acosta, of course, is under intense scrutiny for a deal he gave sex offender and multimillionaire Jeffrey Epstein back in 2008.
Hello, and welcome back to my podcast, Jeffrey Epstein, the Multi-Million Dollar Monster. In the last episode, I gave insight into who Jeffrey Epstein was on the surface, a smart, multi-million dollar American financier who came from a small middle-class family in New York, living what many would call the dream. A man who had many close connections to some of the most important people in the world. But behind this wealthy and successful businessman lies a monster, which we discussed a little bit of last time. In today's episode, though, we will cover the beginning of Jeffrey Epstein's scandals and elaborate on his true diabolical character. But, once more, on a more serious note, before I get into this episode, I would like to give a quick disclaimer that this podcast overall does cover some sensitive material and topics, mainly regarding sexual assault and abuse. I try to the best of my ability to create this podcast with as much sympathy as possible, as I understand how emotional these subjects are to many individuals. Now, with that being said, let's begin this episode by giving a quick little refresher of last time. As I mentioned in my last episode, in 2005 is when the first victim of a long list of Epstein victims came forward. That victim was a 14-year-old girl who prompted Jeffrey Epstein to finally be held accountable for his actions, or so you would think. Clearly, there is no justice in the justice system when it comes to people of power. There were countless victims, countless similar stories being said that were silenced when Epstein took his first plea deal that I mentioned in my last episode. This plea deal was a slap in the face to his victims, and he faced no real punishment. His time spent in prison was more so of like a work vacation, if anything. My true reason for this podcast is to highlight how the justice system refuses to crack down on people of a high status. Now, with that being said, I want to get into this timeline that was published by the HuffPost by Sarah Babalotz. This timeline is extremely vital as it highlights the fall of Jeffrey Epstein. Now, this timeline does begin in 1953 with his birth and talks about his life, but we covered his background and his upbringing in my last episode, so I don't want to repeat any of that information. So we're going to go right back to 2005, where the 14-year-old girl came forward to police with her parents. This teenager said in March 2005 that she was taken by a peer to Epstein's Palm Beach mansion, where she says he paid her to give him a massage. An ensuing police investigation signaled that Epstein was in contact with multiple girls, and his staff said the girls visited frequently. In May 2006, he was charged with multiple counts of unlawful sex acts with a minor. In July 2006, under pressure from the Palm Beach police, who were unhappy with the state's handling of its case against Epstein, the FBI launched its own investigation. Now we're going to move on to 2007, where the infamous plea deal was floating around with Alexander Acosta, the U.S. attorney in Miami at the time. Now, I want you to take a second just to remember that name, because it's going to hold a role of importance later in this episode. The victims were not notified that of this agreement, and all grand jury subpoenas were voided, according to the Miami Herald. In June 2008, Epstein appears in court and pleads guilty on two lesser counts and sentenced to a cushy 18 months in jail. Epstein appeared in the Palm Beach County courtroom on June 30, 2008, with none of his accusers present. He was required to register as a sex offender and report to jail. In July 2008, his accusers learned about the secret plea deal, and the women promptly began the very lengthy process of challenging it in court. But in July 2009, Epstein was released from his 18-month jail sentence in the private wing of the Palm Beach County Stockade, where he hired his own security detail and was able to go to work 6 days a week, up to 12 hours. In 2011, Epstein was told to register as a sex offender in New York City, where it was later revealed that Epstein never once checked in with the New York Police Department in the 8 years since he was told to do so every 90 days in order to verify his address. Now we're going to move on to 2018, where the Miami Herald publishes its expose on Epstein's long history of alleged sexual abuse, which I covered in my last episode and I incorporated clips. So if you want to go back to refer to that, it would be helpful if you just don't remember. Now in July 2019, the most recent, Epstein was arrested and indicted for sex trafficking underage girls. Epstein pleaded not guilty and was facing up to 45 years in prison if convicted. On July 11th, more than a dozen women who, according to their attorneys, previously unknown to law enforcement, came forward with sexual abuse accusations against Epstein, according to the Herald. Now, I know that timeline was a lot, and there was a lot of information there, which I'm hoping you were able to take all of that in. Now, I want to go back to 2011, where Epstein was told to register as a sex offender and verify his address every 90 days. In which he didn't. You know, Epstein constantly evaded the rules. You know, as a registered sex offender in New York, never checked up with the police to verify his address, as a sex offender must do. I see this as a sign that he believes he's untouchable. Because he has this, you know, high role of power, he's like, what are they gonna do if I don't verify him? I got away with the crimes I did. I got out 5 months early. No one's going to touch me. And there were countless other things that Epstein did to these young girls, but for the sake of my audience in the podcast, I will not be mentioning. But just keep in mind that the horrible things that I did mention didn't even cover it all. Now, as I said before, Alexander Acosta was going to hold a role of importance later on, and I just want to mention him and the non-prosecution agreement with an article that was published by the Miami Herald, written by Julie K. Brown, that highlights some very important events. It stated the following. The PAC required Epstein to plead guilty to two prosecution charges in state court. Epstein and four of his accomplices named in the agreement received immunity from all federal criminal charges. But even more unusual, the deal included wording that granted immunity to any potential co-conspirators who were involved in Epstein's crimes. These accomplices or participants were not identified in the agreement, leaving it open to interpretation whether it possibly refers to the other influential people who were having sex with underage girls at Epstein's various homes or on his plane. As part of the agreement, Acosta agreed, despite a federal law to the contrary, that the deal would be kept from his victims. As a result, the non-prosecution agreement was sealed until it was approved by the judge, thereby averting any chance that the girls or anyone else might show up in court and try to derail it. So, immediately off the bat, the first thing that caught my attention with this was that immunity was granted to any, quote, co-conspirators. It leaves it up to interpretation. As we said before, Epstein has a large list of people he's connected to. This entire case is a web of money, power, and crime that no one is held accountable for. And Jeffrey basically ends up taking the fall for them later on. You know, the fact that this was sealed and hidden off from not only the women, but anyone else in the case, despite a federal law that prevents this from occurring, obviously it shows that the law just doesn't apply to higher individuals. Now, back to Alexander Acosta, who is now a reoccurring name in this episode. So let's give you some background. Obviously, he is one of the men behind the absolutely unjustifiable plea deal that was granted to Epstein. Alexander Acosta was the U.S. attorney in Miami and the former United States Secretary of Labor under the Trump administration. Emphasis on the word former, as he resigned after Epstein was charged with child sex trafficking and conspiracy to commit sex trafficking in 2019. In an article published in The Guardian, written by Edward Helmore, it stated the following. Trump announced the news on Friday with Acosta by his side at the White House. Alex Acosta is a great Secretary of Labor, Trump said. I hate to see this happen. He did not ask Acosta to leave the cabinet. Acosta said he did not think it was right for the handling of Epstein's case to distract from his work as the Secretary of Labor. I called the president this morning and told him I thought the right thing to do was to step aside, Acosta said, adding that it would be selfish for me to stay in this position and continue talking about a case that's 12 years old rather than the amazing economy we have right now. As stated previously, Epstein had connections to some of the most powerful men in the world, President Donald Trump being one of them. I do find it to be quite a coincidence that Acosta had the position he did in the first place. Every time I think of Epstein and his connections, as I keep mentioning the world connections, right? I think of this giant spider web with so many links of people, power, money, stories. It's insane how all of these things all connect back to one man, and Epstein's name is just stamped right in the middle of that spider web. I wanted to incorporate this following audio clip from Acosta's press meeting on Epstein and on him stepping down from being the Secretary of Labor.
The Palm Beach State Attorney's Office was ready to let Epstein walk free. No jail time. Nothing. Prosecutors in my former office found this to be completely unacceptable. And they became involved. Our office became involved. Our prosecutors, as this 2008 article recounts, presented the ultimatum: plead guilty to more serious charges, charges that required jail time, registration, and restitution, or we'd roll the dice and bring a federal indictment. Without the work of our prosecutors, Epstein would have gotten away with just that state charge. I have viewed the victim interviews. They're hard to watch because I know that my former colleagues, the men and women of my office, wanted to help them. I wanted to help them. That is why we intervened.
Now, just taking a second to assess that audio clip, even though it's only a minute of the over an hour and a half conference that I listened to in its entirety, which is very interesting, by the way. But the thing I found most interesting about this short audio clip is to see the shift with Acosta, because he didn't seem to care much for the victims before, as he didn't inform them when the creation of this plea deal occurred. So why the change of heart? Is he genuinely saying these things? Or is he just trying to cover for himself? Because if he actually had any care and simply any decency, because he said he heard the victim statements from the victims themselves, he understands the severity of and level of Epstein's malicious acts toward these young and vulnerable women. He would have told them about this plea deal. And he spends the entire audio clip defending himself, defending the plea deal, defending the people he worked with, because he said it was the best sensible option, as it looked like Jeffrey Epstein was going to walk away free. You see, if this was the best option for the victims, why couldn't he say that Epstein was going to walk free? I feel like if he stated this to the victims, it would have looked better on his part, because it shows that he put his best efforts to put this man away. But the fact that he kept it sealed from the victims and anyone else who was connected to Epstein, it shows you that he doesn't care, you know. And if this was the best option for justice for the victims, why does the plea deal give immunity to Epstein's co-conspirator and associates who also played a part in those crimes against those young girls? It's just, there's no way to defend this, clearly. Like, there shouldn't be a reason why his associates have immunity. Because if he cared about putting sexual predators away, he would not only put Epstein away, but all the people who also committed these acts, as I said previously. Like, this whole case gives me a headache. You know, as I'm researching, as I'm looking through all these videos, articles, witness statements, it's so, like, emotionally draining because there's so many unanswered questions. There's so many conspiracies that have me thinking, and it's simply just the lack of justice here that these victims deserve is what angers me the most. It's simply not fair. It's just not. These girls have to live their lives knowing that they're never going to be able to get the justice that they are promised by the justice system. That men like Epstein and his conspirators are able to do whatever they please and have no consequences for their actions. It's also genuinely hard for me to believe Acosta here because, as I said, he was working for Donald Trump. In my previous episode, I mentioned the relationship between Epstein and Trump. Trump once said, and I quote, that Epstein was a terrific guy who's lots of fun and loves beautiful women like him, you know, and Acosta and Trump seem to have a close relationship as well. The connection between the three of them simply doesn't add up, and that's why I just can't see Acosta genuinely, you know, having any regards for these women. I feel like he just doesn't care. In 2019, this case has already been out for like 12 years. So if he had any care, I feel like something would have been said earlier. It took Jeffrey Epstein being indicted and charged with child sex trafficking and prostitution for him to say anything. And once it was thrown in his face, that's when he begins to defend himself. And that's when he begins to care. That's just, it's ridiculous. So it's obvious he didn't care because for years he didn't pay any mind to these victims until it was thrown in his face. You know, as I said, it's a giant web that's just interconnected with Jeffrey Epstein, you know. Acosta said he stepped down of his own will because he just feels like it isn't right for the Trump administration, but genuinely, of course, this is just my opinion. Looking at everything with Epstein and this whole case and how everything is just manipulated and twisted, I do not believe that Acosta stepped down out of his own volition. I feel like he did it to cover once more. So clearly here, Jeffrey Epstein and his associates are malicious individuals who continuously get away for their malevolent acts. You know, in the next episode, I want to get into his 2019 trial and his suicide that has multiple interesting conspiracy theories that will have you thinking. But not only that, I will continue to highlight the failing justice system that allows for these wealthy, powerful men to get away with hurting and scarring so many innocent people. Now, I know this podcast and episode in general does cover a lot of sensitive material, as I stated before, but if you have been a victim of sexual assault, please know that you are not alone. There are many resources that are available 24/7 to help. www.rainn.org being one of them, which provides hotlines, online support, and other valuable information. There is always help. I'm Yanni Sanchez, and as always, thank you for listening to Jeffrey Epstein, the multi-million dollar monster. See you next time.